Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Got a favorite Kate Bush song that you want to leave a couple of thoughts on? Well, you can call our hotline at 1-757-349-6369. That's 1-757-349-6369. And your thoughts could be played on a future episode. Hope to hear from you. Strange Phenomena now has a Patreon page. If you would like to support the show, then you can visit patreon.com/KateBushPodcast to see what wonderful rewards we're offering for your support of the show. Thank you. And now, on with the show.
About this song called The Fog on here, featuring your father as himself.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shout It Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things Kiss. Of course, I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
This is my first feature film.
Family Affairs album. Tell me about that song. It's. I haven't quite got the hang of it, but it's something to do with childhood. It's something to do with childhood memories and grow up and stand on your own 2 feet and off you go. I think so anyway. But you tell me what you were thinking.
Yes. Well, that's jolly good.
Don't be wrong. But...
No. It's not. It's quite a complex song where it's very watery, and it's meant to be this sort of idea of big expanses of water and being in a relationship now and flashing back to being a child being taught how to swim and using these two situations as the idea of learning to let go. When I was a child, my father used to take me out into the water and he'd hold me by my hands and then let go and say, okay, now come on, you swim to me. And as he'd say this, he'd be walking backwards, so the gap would be getting bigger and bigger. And you know, you're sort of going, blum, blum, blum. But it's all that, you know, I thought that was such an interesting situation there, you know, where you're scared because you think you're going to drown, but you know you won't because, you know, you trust your father and your father won't let you drown, hopefully. And same for him, you know, he's kind of letting go. He's letting his child be alone in a situation that, you know, he has to... Everyone's learning and hopefully growing. And the idea with the relationship was to be in this again, back there swimming and being taught to swim, but not by your father, by your partner. And the idea of it's okay because you are grown up now. So you don't have to be frightened, because all you have to do is put your feet down and the bottom's there. The water isn't so deep that you'll drown. You put your feet down, you can stand up. In fact, it's only waist high. Look, you know, what's the problem? You know, what are you so worried about? You know, which, again, I think it's such a human condition where we actually, a lot of the time, have such fear of things that actually there's no need to be frightened of at all. You know, it's all in our heads, this big kind of trap, you know, that actually it's not always as terrifying as we think. And I guess, again, you know, it's meant to be saying, OK, so it can be rough, but there must be a way out. You know, it's all right.
Welcome to Strange Phenomena, the music of Kate Bush. I am Cecily Link, and this week we're going to be talking about track 3 from Kate Bush's 6th studio album, The Sensual World. We're going to be slipping into not the morning fog, but just the fog. And with me to talk about the song this week is someone who hasn't been on the show in about a year. We haven't actually recorded in about a year, almost exactly a year. We're recording this in early September. It's actually September 1st. It's when this is being recorded. So you get to know how far in advance I record these things. And we're going to be talking with...
Hi, I'm Zoe. Didn't miss me. I know. It's okay. Well, Cecily maybe did because she's nice. But I'm here. I'm back to annoy you guys all again with feminist analysis that you didn't want and didn't ask for. I love this song. I claimed it way back in like 2017. I know like one of the first times I ever talked to Cecily, I was like, pretend I'm doing the fog. And I didn't love it that much that time. I don't even know if I did. But ever since I first heard it, I need to talk about the song because the first thing that ever came to my mind when I heard it, and I always still hear, is the opening, "You see I'm all grown up now," for me will always parallel. So, I know it would be young, but I've got feelings too. And Britney Spears, I'm a Slave for You. Like, I need to share that insight with the world so that they can never hear the fog without hearing I'm a Slave for You alongside it ever again. So there you go. Episode over. No, that's not true. I have a lot more things to share. But,
yes, we do.
Yeah. And yeah, Cecily's right. It's pretty much exactly a year to the day from the last time we recorded. Mm-hmm. Very happy to be back.
And I believe the last one we recorded was I think it was Hello Earth.
Yes, it was.
Yay!
We are stuck in the water.
Yes, we are. We're just still like swimming around and trying.
We're treading water, trying not to. Exactly a year, still a song about water. Mm-hmm. I'm sitting in the exact same place, very different world. Let's get out of that world and into the sensual world. we just want to be in the sensual world right now. No real world.
Now, I will have to say, I'm actually, because, you know, a year ago when we were talking, I was in a different state. I have since moved. And there is definitely, I'm actually closer now to water than I was before. And I can tell you, because I live now out in the country, and there is always a lot of fog in the morning. Like, I wake up in the morning when I go to do my job working from home, and I open up the windows so I can let the cats up, because, you know, they have to have the windows up so they can be like, hey, gotta look out, gotta see, gotta protect you. And I look out over the fields, and it's just, in most mornings, it's like this light, misty fog. It's so beautiful. Except, though, in this song, like, the fog, as we're going to talk about, like, fog is more ominous and scary.
Yeah. Dark Soul Terrors. Yeah. And I'm from New York City, born and raised, lived there in Brooklyn, but I currently am in Fire Island, not the fun gay part, always have to preface, which is like the locus of like all of my swimming issues and like a lot of personal connections to this song. So it's good placement. Like, you're in a different state. I'm in a different mental state than last year, but same thing. I was notorious in my summer camp. So I went to the camp out here. It was like a BF kind of camp. It was only 3 hours a day. But I was like notorious. I know, right? But okay. So it was notorious. I was notorious for being the worst swimmer in the whole camp, like out of all the kids in Fire Island. There was once even the town librarian. So I guess help in context is that when I was like, I was born with a lot of hearing issues. I had to have three, you know, like those types of surgeries where they caught getting a set of tubes. I had that three times. So I always had like earplugs as a result. And I think that made me like scared of water and stuff. But the town librarian, who ironically was kind of mean, which you wouldn't expect, she at one point, like, I was so bad at swimming, and I refused to jump in the water like normal people do. Mm-hmm. I've always been weird. She at one point, town librarian, was walking by and literally threw me in. Like that.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
It was, I was just, yeah, that was not good. I still can really barely swim. So I go to the beach like every day when I'm here. I never go in the water, even with splat. I just, oof, it just turned me off. So I, both of us have swimming issues that feed into our connection to the song. Oh, we would have awards at the end of every summer, and every single year I got most improved swimmer because it was like, if I did anything, that was improvement. If I like went underwater once, it was improvement. If I like put a foot out, it was an improvement. So I got that award every year. Kate Bush's father would have been proud.
And meanwhile, I did not learn to properly swim until I was in my 30s because I was a landlocked suburban yuppie kid growing up in the DC suburbs.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I never, I knew kids who would go and visit Ocean City, or they would travel south to Virginia Beach, right around where I used to live. But I never went to the beach, also because I'm like pale, you know, pasty, very, very pasty white girl, red hair. And so I burn easily. And if I would ever spend any time outside, even like 5 minutes, I would start to look like I burn. And I'm like, I was only outside for 5 minutes, I swear. So I never really went to the ocean. And we had a neighborhood pool, but I didn't really swim around in there too much. So I didn't learn to swim until I was 32, something like that. I'm 35 now as of this recording. And when I started learning to swim, it was at a local Y, and I was going there with my now ex, and he was Boy Scout, so he was starting to teach me how to swim. And so as he was teaching me how to swim, I was fucking scared. I really was, because I was afraid that I would make one little wrong move and I would drown. Because you know, you can drown even in just a foot of water, they say. And so that's what I was afraid of. And also, I was always under the impression that I could not float, because I would try to float as a kid and I just couldn't do it. Now I can fucking float. I can float with the best of them. I can swim on my back. I can do all that fun stuff. I haven't done that in about a year or so. But, you know, I'm sure that swimming, like riding a bicycle, you never really forget how to do it, you know? So that was my issue with swimming. I was just, I was scared to do it. And I didn't like it if I ever got like water up my nose, because that chlorine would just burn as it went down my throat. Mm-hmm. Hated it. So when I get this song, the Fog, like I didn't really have much personal connection to it. First time I heard it on the Central World, I liked it, but it was like, I don't know, there's just, it wasn't quite grabbing me. But it wasn't until I started learning to swim that the Fog made sense to me.
Yeah, now that I'm thinking about it, it's a weird mixture of imagery, because it's like of nature imagery, right? Because there's the fog imagery and the water imagery. And listen, I'm from New York City. I don't know much about nature. But in my mind, those things don't really go together. I feel like on this album more than others, she, and I'll mention to talk about this later, she kind of just, it's like what she said about Love and Anger, how she said this is the song of hers she understands the least, because it just kind of came out. It's like, as opposed to her story songs, it's like, well, this person's was the understudy, the person in the Hunchback of Notre Dame. This is just like, I'm just writing whatever is coming out of me, and so what comes out doesn't necessarily like make as much sense. It doesn't tell a specific story. It's more conveying ideas.
Yeah, because, and also just the way this song begins, I mean, when we get into the structure, I find this song also very interesting structurally too.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the way that it starts, and then like where you end with the song is in a completely different place from where you started. Mm-hmm. I find that to be very interesting structurally. I mean, I'm always fascinated with the structure of Kate's songs, because they're not, it's not like strict, you know, verse, chorus.
Yeah.
It goes, and I've talked about this in a lot of episodes, that, and a part of what I love about Kate's music is that she doesn't follow that strict formula that I've learned, you know, songwriting 101, verse, chorus, bridge, if you want to, and then a chorus. It doesn't really have that. It's very flowing and liquid, very much.
Yeah, definitely. And it's you can focus more on the structure, because there aren't these dense lyrics that you have to have footnotes for, you know, like a song like Houdini. But yeah, we can go on in. I'm not resisting every urge to dive in.
So, yeah, the story behind the song. So this is the third track on The Central World. And it notably features the voice of her father, Dr. Bush. So she has her dad in there, which makes sense, because she's got the imagery in there of, you know, a parent and their child teaching them how to swim. And the production-wise, we've got a lot of the usual folks who have played on Kate's recordings, like Stuart Elliott playing on the drums and Alan Murphy on guitar. Now, on solo violin, we have Nigel Kennedy, who notably played the violin on Experiment 4. We have Jonathan Williams playing the cello. And we have a Celtic harp from Alan Stivel, I might have to punch that one in there, who I know of as, he's a Celtic harpist. He's actually worked with one of my other favorite artists, Nolwenn Lacroix, who is known for doing kind of French slash Celtic music. Whistles from Davy Spillane, dialogue Dr. Bush, and notably the orchestra was arranged by Michael Kamen, who was a very sought after arranger for a number of people, like Pink Floyd, David Gilmour and Roger Waters, Queen, Eric Clapton, Roger Daltrey, Aerosmith, David Bowie, Brian Ferry, Eurythmics, Rush, Metallica, and of course Kate. He actually for Kate, he's done orchestra for the songs This Woman's Work, Heads Were Dancing, the song, and Moments of Pleasure. Substantially building upon a simple piano theme Bush had composed. In this instance and many others, he conducted the orchestra personally for the recording. So that's kind of jumping ahead to Moments of Pleasure, but he's the one who did those strings on Moments of Pleasure. They're just, oh my God, those strings. They just get me.
Yeah, that's definitely her most probably orchestral song. Oh, I'm probably pronouncing it wrong.
Kamen has had a successful partnership with Bryan Adams, composing scores for songs. Oh. So everything I do it for you. Sorry if it's now in your head, if you know that song. He wrote that song, and he passed away in 2003 at the age of 55 of a heart attack. He died in London. So major orchestra arranger there on the song, and that orchestra, oh my God, when we started talking about like the, because that's one of my favorite parts of the song. Oh my God.
Totally. So I have an important question, because I don't have the vinyl of this, so I can't check like the way it was listed. Do they actually say dialogue Dr. Bush?
That's what the credits say.
That's dialogue, great. Dr. I love Bush. That's too cute. I love that.
I know. So that's a production wise, a lot of really beautiful it's very beautiful layers in this song, mm-hmm. and with all those, I personally can't hear the Celtic harp in there, but I probably just need to listen a little bit more closely, because mostly I hear the orchestra and some strings. Of the guitar and those strings and the cello. We've got some neat ideas about for what the song is about, and to me it's, on a general level, I think it's about growing up. A lot of this album, I feel, is like songs about like growing up and kind of figuring out who you are and relationships.
Like Britney's third self-titled album.
Exactly. Okay.
Parallels. It is. Okay. I kid you not.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying. Britney's third album self-titled. Parallels.
I look at this as being about how one of the hardest things to do when you're growing up is letting go of your fears, especially if they've kind of been ingrained in you, I guess, a little bit. Like learning how to swim. Learning how to swim can be very scary, and usually you learn to swim when you're a kid. You learn from your parents, and in the context of the song, especially with her dad saying, just put your feet down, child. It's dad who's teaching them how to swim and guiding them.
Or you're me and you learn from the swimming teacher who you have a crush on, but you don't realize it because you're four and you don't know that girls can like girls.
Or I learned to swim from, you know, my now ex, who was a Boy Scout and knew this stuff.
I probably only learned because I had a crush on Kelly, and I was like, oh, well, Kelly, I can do
it. Gotta impress. And so for me, like I was saying, I didn't learn to swim until a few years ago, and I remember being very scary, and it was hard for me to let go of my fears of drowning, of not getting the stroke done right the first time, and just looking at the pool and going, yeah, I know that's only 4 feet deep, but oh God, it just feels like it's deep as the ocean. Oh God. But then just realizing, like, once you actually try it, that, hey, wait a minute, it's not as scary as you think it is. You just have to let go of it a little bit. And as you're letting go, you see that, hey, this isn't so bad. And maybe you even start to enjoy it a little bit, even as it's scaring you. But you realize that the fears that you had were all just in your head, and that it's not as bad as you think it is. And
then a shark comes.
Like, oh, yeah, this is great. Yeah, shark comes up. Yeah. Or piranha or something like that. But hopefully none of those. Luckily, none of those things have happened to me. After all, I'm still here in one piece. So, I mean, for me, it's, I've been able also to kind of equate this to other things that I've been scared to do in life, and realizing that, oh, wait, you know, if you just put your feet down, the water isn't as deep as you think it is. It's only waist high. Oh, wait, I can do this.
That's really powerful. That's literally a whole form of therapy. Oh, for background, if you haven't before, I'm a therapist. LOL, I know. But
well, I figure definitely.
Not for you, but for any reader, I mean, listeners, I know you're probably going to get a lot of new ones after the Atomic Blonde dude episode. But so I'm the in-house therapist, and there's this whole type of therapy called behavioral activation, which is all about people's depression. They tend to, the whole mindset when you have depression is, I can't do this thing until I feel better. But the behavioral activation is about reversing that and saying, like, actually doing the thing will make you feel better. So if you can get to that point where you're actually, like, doing stuff, then it's like it's outside in versus inside out. Mm-hmm. So that's great. That's exactly what you're just describing with this song and your feelings about it. Yeah, and Kate, in her music so often, like we talked about in the Get Out of My House episode, there's just so much, and like all of the Ninth Wave, like so much of her work is about confronting rather than walking away from fears. And like her whole career is about that. Besides the fear of releasing a DVD, but let's not go there. Okay, so this is time for my little spiel. Hopefully we'll keep it little.
Yeah, so what does this song mean to you? You've got some really cool thoughts on this. And also, by the way, what you were mentioning about, like, you know, getting yourself to the point where you can actually do the thing and that will make you feel better. I should have known there would be a term for that, because that's what my therapist tries to get me to do, because I deal with
behavioral
depression.
Behavioral activation, baby.
Oh, yeah. Like, she's like they're like guiding me, like, no, like, actually, like, get in and try the thing.
That's, well, your therapist is lucky, because the kids I work with teenagers, they don't do any of it. I try.
Well, you can lead them to water, but you can't make them drink. You're like, come on, just drink, goddammit.
You can't even know. These kids, they can't even walk in the water. But anyways, I digress. So I have, it's interesting that I have, so like most of my thoughts about the song are about the meaning, but the reason I love the song is because of its sounds. I don't even like, it's not about the meaning for me. It's just about this auditory experience. But I will remember when this first occurred to me. It was last summer. This is what happens with Kate songs. You're always rediscovering new riches, right?
Yeah.
I've listened to it a zillion times. I'm walking, I remember, from my apartment to my old job last summer, listening to this song, and it hit, like, what this song means has hit me. Or in terms of what it means to me, I guess. And in terms, I guess I had last summer was when that movie Midsommar came out, and there's this line in it where, I didn't even love it, but this line in it, to get going to therapy again, is so, like, important. It's where it says, does one of the characters is asking the main character about her boyfriend. He says, does he feel like home to you? Something like that. And kind of, I didn't consciously think at the time, but as I was then, like, writing down, I just remember writing down my thoughts on this song and what I was thinking about what it means to grow up and finding a sense of home and settled within the self, and that it relates to this idea of finding someone who feels like home to us, as opposed to just feeling at home within ourselves, and how, like, in life, we're kind of jumping from person to person to find someone who feels like home to us, instead of maybe us to them, like, home. But anyways, so what's interesting, and something actually as you were talking, it just occurred to me, is, I think first off, it's interesting that she has Dr. Bush as the male speaker, I guess because she has to, because he's who taught her how to swim, so it's true to her experience. Because this whole water imagery, I mean, being in a pond or a lake, that's always in literature, like a womb metaphor, mm-hmm. always. Like, so it's interesting that this womb metaphor should actually be launched out into the world by the father instead of the mother. And Lockins this, that actually kind of reminds me a lot of how in all these interviews early on, she's like, yeah, I'm thinking of myself as like a male artist, mm-hmm. like, and not, I don't feel aligned with women artists. So it's like she sees herself as being birthed by a man, right? Which she kind of loves, like male musicians like Bowie and mm-hmm. Roxy Music, Elton John. But so kind of like on a, I agree with you very much on a in general sense, this song is about growing up and coming off the ninth wave, whose protagonist is battling for her life inside the deep seas. Listeners are already primed to think of the water in A Cape Song as a scary place where introspection happens. Mm-hmm. So she said of the song, her quote is, growing up for most people is just trying to stop escaping, looking at things inside yourself rather than outside. Mm-hmm. And as we discussed, if you go back to the Hounds of Love intro episode from last season, the first episode, Cecily and I talked about a bunch about how the whole point of what makes the ninth wave supposed to be scary is arises from the terror within her and from the act of introspection and looking inside herself more deeply than she ever had. And like having those Waking the Witch flashbacks was coming from within her. It's not coming from an outside force. Mm-hmm. So therefore growing up means in the context of her work and this song, being able to live with this terror and no longer view it as something frightening, which is something really important in life, is be able to tolerate distress and not only ever run, what we were just talking about, to tolerate distress and not just run away from it. Mm-hmm. And so, and it's also what's interesting is the sequencing of this song on the album. And this is my last prelude to kind of the main analysis, which I call the Father Gives the Bride Away narrative analysis. But like, but the sequencing, so this song ends, and then the first line of the next song, Reaching Out, say, just like a child reaching out instinctively, sung in this very delicate vibrato-laden style. So it's just interesting that it's like back in the womb, like we exited the womb, we're back in the womb, Kick Inside. Maybe this album should have been called the Kick Inside.
Well, she did say that she felt like this was her most female album.
Oh yeah, I have a lot of feelings on that.
Yeah. I have some few thoughts on that as well.
Whatever the hell a female album means, but because I'm sorry, like, girl, your most female album is Kick Inside, okay? But anyway.
So the father gives the bride away analysis.
Okay, well, I don't know. I was curious. Do you have any thoughts about the sequencing thing of how this song ends, which is about kind of this womb experience or growing up experience, and then she's like the next song is so childlike and about the experience of a child.
Yeah, this, and also like how this comes after a song that is very chaotic and mm-hmm. has a lot of things going on and that Kate herself doesn't even know what it's really about. It's just her trying to write she would say in interviews, you know, that bloody song. Of course, mm-hmm. it would sound even cooler because I'm not going to try and do a British accent because it'll sound like I'm mocking when I'm not trying to. But this comes after like this kind of rousing sort of song about the complexity of female and male relationships, and it's feels very organic. And then you get into this song and it's so heavy on the orchestra and the atmosphere. Like this one is feels a little bit more dreamy in a way. If that makes any sense. And then
I was thinking of the word dreamy earlier when you were talking about it.
And then the next song, it going into Reaching Out, that one is kind of going back to a little bit of like not as much instrumentation. It's like every song, and I know we've talked about this on other episodes, that all of her songs have their own like contained universes. They all somehow mm-hmm. connect, but they're all so different, and yet they just make sense put together on an album. But I find this, that the placement of this interesting, especially sonically, because the songs mm-hmm. around it are so different, but the theme and some of the imagery definitely fits together. I can see what you mean about, see how the child, see how the flower leans instinctively.
Oh, that one.
See how the child reaches out instinctively. To feel how fire will feel.
I knew I got it. I never get anything related to Kate Bashong, ever.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, right, and they... the fire. Yeah, it's like, it's all that song is kind of about, like, figuring out the world around you in a textile way and finding a sense of security. And, like, so is this. So I'm like, girl, I thought the end of this song you were feeling secure and launched, but, like, guess not. But, yeah, speaking of feeling secure, so the, what I call, like, giving the bride away to the husband analysis, which I, this is kind of what I came up with last summer, and I have made a lot less heteronormative over the past year because I realized it was very heteronormative, and it is on purpose because, so I want to preface this by stating that, of course, the romantic, this song is by a narrator who's discussing a, there's a father figure, and there's some romantic partner that the narrator is being launched into the arms to. And this, that obviously does not have to be read as the narrator's a woman and the romantic figure is a man, because it's reductive to ever assume that Kate Bush is a narrator of a Kate Bush song.
Right.
However, I read it in the sense that, and most of her songs where there's not a specific story and there's just a narrator talking about a romantic partner, I usually assume that it's a woman talking to a man or vice versa, just because, I mean, this is Miss 1985 interview, and I mean, you just think of Butch lesbians. So she's, she's just not, I don't think, bless her heart, but I don't think she's capable, really, of writing about and conceptualizing relationships as not, as being other than, between a man and a woman, upcoming song, unless it's in relationships. As, like, I don't think she can do that, like, conceptualize that, unless it's in a way like Kashka from Baghdad, another good episode to check out in the past, where she exoticizes the gayness, or in Wow, where the he's too busy hitting the Vaseline line, it's kind of like an in-joke. So even though God / Kate knows that I relate to this song so much, like, especially this particular analysis of it, of like not feeling like feeling like you want more than anything in the world to have somebody in your life who feels like home to you and not just be alone all the damn time. Has someone been in perfect quarantine? So it doesn't have to be straight. I just kind of initially take it that way, and that's where this analysis comes from, just because of her, what I know of her. I just don't think she sees gay, especially like women as like a thing. But so here's the context. Let's get all academic, y'all. So within heteropatriarchy and the system known as compulsory heterosexuality, which is far more complex than current Tumblr and Twitter discourse suggests. So compulsory heterosexuality stems especially from you can find a free PDF online, a short article called Compulsory Heterosexuality and Lesbian Existence by Adrienne Rich. Google it. It's so worth your time. I know when I first read it when I was in like freshman college, it really put a lot of things I was perceiving and noticing in the world about the way men and women relate into words I wasn't able to put into words before. But so the term compulsory heterosexuality gets really misinterpreted in online discourse by like people who've never read the essay as meaning women are forced to be straight, which like that's part of it. It's a system in which women of all sexual orientations, including lesbians, must define themselves within relationships to men.
Yeah.
Like, right. So it's like, you could even be a lesbian impacted by this because there's like, I'm not like other girls. I just have guy friends, you know? But it's way bigger than even that. I mean, she has, I won't go into it, but she has this whole, like, in the article outlines 8 different ways in which this system is reinforced. And it's really incredible. But so within these systems of heteropatriarchy and compulsory heterosexuality, the way, like, male identification is this important term, defined by Adrienne Rich as the casting of one's social, political, and intellectual allegiances with men. So girls have, a girl in her words, she turns away from her heretofore primary relationship with girlfriends, female friends. As they become secondary to her, they recede in importance in her life. Her own identity also assumes a secondary role, and she grows into male identification. Mm-hmm. So that's where my language comes from, of the father gives you away at your wedding to your husband. You're getting passed from man to man. And it's also sometimes called like traffic and woman analysis, because there's another great, I was a woman studies English double major, so that's coming out. Like, there's another great article called The Traffic in Women by Gail Rubin that talks about this. Whoa, so the reason I, how does this apply to The Fog, you ask? So this is a song about growing up. And my question is, what does growing up mean within heteropatriarchy, capitalism, all of that? And it means for straight women, generally, and for all women, even if you're not straight, the societal ideal is growing up means for you to, and for, and again, not just for straight women, for all people, to find a partner and form a family.
Yep.
So, because I remember in one of my grad school classes, we were talking like young adulthood, like the markers of adulthood. And it was like, it was not good for my self-esteem. It was like, find a partner, get married, have a child, buy a house, have a long-term job. It was all these things that like is not really applicable to us millennials because all the olds have ruined the world for us.
Yeah, pretty much.
But like these are the, yeah, but these, there are these like markers of what it's like growing up is a very loaded term. We talk about it, but we don't dissect what it means. Like within our society, which is shaped by many forms of oppression, there's a very specific way that one is supposed to quote unquote grow up and to do it correctly or not. Like we make fun of people for living in their parents' basement, right? But like maybe they have plenty of good reasons for doing so.
Yeah.
So how does this connect to the song? So she said, talking about the meaning of the song, you won't drown because your father won't let you drown. Then the same for him, the father, he's kind of letting go. He's letting the child be alone in the situation. The idea that the relationship is to be in this again, be there swimming and being taught to swim, not by your father, but by your partner. A, I'm impressed she said partner, like in 1989, I wouldn't have seen it come from her. But the thing is, so in this part where she's saying, he's letting go, he's letting the child be alone, it's like, okay, for 5 minutes till she finds a husband. For me, the fog is kind of about the scariness of being in love, especially relating to losing that person through like being let go by them. So this initial like terror of like, dad has me held tight, but he's gonna let go and I'm gonna be let like into the sea and the fog and all that. So she compares that to the feeling of feeling let go. I think it's a metaphor of this whole swimming thing. I think it's just a feeling of like a metaphor for that feeling of being released into the world, which is interesting coming from her because she kind of released herself into the world. She's the one who like moved to London as a teenager, take dance classes and essentially live on her own. And I'm trying not to read this autobiographical, but it does feel like a personal song if her dad is on it. So as a child, the narrator learned to grow comfortable with discomfort and eventually did learn how to swim in what she calls the deep and dark water. But now when she's with this partner who I kind of presume is a man, but not for anyone, they have to grow comfortable with that discomfort that all over again, that relationships present, because you're once again, you're somebody, when you love somebody, what comes up isn't just your love for them, but your fear of losing them. Love comes, everything exciting always comes with anxiety, right? Like nothing's ever like 100% perfect. So like in Hounds of Love, the title track, there's that whole description of love as an overpowering frightening force. It's not something that you're like welcoming in. It feels like it's taking over you as opposed to something you have control of. And that's kind of, the love overpowers her in the way that drowning would overpower a person who can't swim. In the same way, she's overpowered by love if she can't navigate this relationship and feel truly held by that person. Song doesn't have that many lyrics.
It doesn't, no.
Right. So, but what it does, like, really gets across. But so the stanza, is this love big enough to watch over me, big enough to let go of me without hurting me, like the day I learned to swim? So I'm just really fascinated by all of this. I'm really fascinated by how this song that growing up starts with this image and literally the sound of Kate being let go by her father's hand. And now she's trying to be and stay held by presumably another man, but another person.
Just put your feet down, child. Because you're all grown up now.
So in my hetero version, for me, this would reflect how for women under heteropatriarchy, maturation is seen as going from father to husband's possession. Mm-hmm. For women who aren't straight, this is problematic because if you don't transfer from father to male lover, in the eyes of society, you're not doing womanhood. You're not doing adulthood right. I do think that this is universal and not just applicable to straight women because society tells, especially now, I mean, with LGBT, like queerness has become so domesticated, like
Ooh,
with
yeah.
the legalization of gay marriage. Yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm not unhappy gay marriage to legalize, but it has really domesticated what used to be a much more radical culture, because now it's like, yeah, we'll get married. Like, I remember when I was younger, I was like, oh, at least I don't have to, because I've never wanted kids. But I was like, well, at least I don't have to think about that. So I'm a dyke. And like, now, sorry if that word offends anyone. I'm fine with using it, like reclaiming it, but if it offends others, I totally understand. Yeah, but if it offends others who are listening, just wanted to apologize. But now, like, all these women want to have kids. And I'm like, oh, shit. you know, like, so the issue is like, so now everything's become so domesticated, and I feel like this narrative is actually quite similar for all people, and men too. Like, you have to run from the familial embrace into another's arms, mm-hmm. and then have partnership as an end goal. And the key to a healthy and secure partnership is feeling like you can be released by them, and they'll still be there for you when you swim back. Like with her father, I mean, he's literally still there for her because he's recording himself on her album. So basically, I see the song's importance theme as the importance of feeling held / finding someone who feels like home to you, in that Midsummer quote, over the course of the lifespan, in order to avoid the scariness of the deep, dark water or fog metaphor she has. So from the parent, because it can be from the mother, like as I said earlier, this imagery is way more womb-like than it relates to a father. So, or a grandmother who raised you, the person who raised you, from that person to your lover, you're released, but then always kind of, I feel like within society, we're aiming to be held again. And I think that it models, as I said, a kind of a healthy relationship. Absolutely. Because the love has to be big enough to not only hold, but also let go of her. Whereas like an unhealthy relationship would be like, no, I need to be like held all the time. Mm-hmm. I guess where it gets sad to me in a way is the fact that like it's modeling this world in which we're like going from person to person. And what does it mean to get lost in the fog? Is that what just being a spinster is? Like, you have to spend, I would know this very well, you have to spend all day with yourself and your own thoughts. Like, is that really the worst thing in the world? You know, and like, if we do think it's the worst thing in the world, is that because of our own loneliness, or is that impact, are we lonely because society tells us we should be? It's so complex and intertwined, right?
It is. So, and definitely, yeah. Like, I know what you mean about, like, we know I was hearing you talk about the hetero,
heteropatriarchy. It's a mouthful.
Yeah, and also, like, compulsory heteronormativity. Oh, my goodness, did I encounter that sort of stuff back when I used to be a teacher in a very, very conservative environment. In that kind of environment, you grew up with this idea, it's always a man with a woman. And blah, never supposed to change.
But even if it's not necessarily in relation to heterosexuality, I just think that culturally there is this thing of like, you are, if you haven't found someone, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
And if you're alone, then like, what is this? Like, basically I'm trying to get to is, what is this fog? If you go into the fog, what happens? You know? And like, this, the fog here seems to be kind of culturally this idea of like not finding this other person to be released to, mm-hmm. or either there's kind of two alternatives, right? There's like either the love envelops you and you're overtaken by it, as she describes being fearful of that happening, or there's no love at all. Yeah, it's heavy.
I know
a lot can happen with very few lyrics.
I know it is, and whatever there is, it's a lot of repetition of them, especially variations on, is this love, you know, is this love big enough to watch over me, or is this love big enough? And just, yeah, it's a lot of atmosphere. It's the atmosphere,
yeah,
that really gets you with this.
And that's why I like it, because I like the movies, the songs, everything. I like things that are about the atmosphere, mm-hmm. even more than meaning. But just kind of what I think reinforces my interpretation of it, because I'm always right, but also this reinforces it, is,
no, but you
I
never quite thought of it that way, but because, you know, I was reading through your notes this morning, like right before, during one of my breaks, and I was like, you know what, you're right, because it is very true, like it, especially in the very conservative Christian environment that I taught, where not only where it was definitely a lot of like passing from man to man, and mm-hmm. the
yeah.
idea of also purity balls, you know, right. And it's the daughter that the father is keeping his daughter pure until he gets to pass her to the husband, and just creepy.
It's so weird. This analysis literally hit me on a walk around Park Slope in summer 2019. Like, it just hit me like a ton of bricks. And yeah, but so what I think reinforces that this is like what the song's about, is that regarding her father's involvement, it's just notable to me that the other, at this point in her career, the most like notable time I feel she's had a parent involved is in her mother in the Suspended in Gaffa video, I have to make everything European, when she's saying, "I'm scared of the changes," then she scurries to her mother, who then holds her. So this is such a similar narrative to the story of The Fog, of this like needing to be held by a parent to feel safe from whatever the vast, unfamiliar scariness is of the unknown. So it's just, I think like that reinforces it, because it's used, like showing this motif in her work of like that parent figure being home for her, essentially.
And yet that's the way it is when you, especially when you're a kid, that your parents or your guardians, I should say, are the people that you look up to. They're the ones who teach you about the world and help you to find your place in it.
Yeah, and I guess my question, there's a rhetorical question, if anyone who listens has any thoughts, I'd love to hear them, is then like, what does it mean then if we don't find that replacement figure, you know, like if we are alone, yeah. Just like, what does that mean for us? And like, does it, yeah, in many contexts.
I mean, I know I have other friends who haven't found any one person, and for some of them, they don't want to find that one person, like they don't believe in that kind of thing, they just rather go from relationship to relationship. Other times it's because they're more focused on their work and they don't have enough time to date and they're just not interested in it, or other folks are ones who would like to find their person, but they just haven't.
Surrealist. Yeah, no, that's hitting home, because like I am non-consensually single, or unelectively single, not by choice, and I feel actually this, now I'm thinking of a lot of stuff, like I do feel quite reliant on my parents in certain ways, like I live a very independent life and don't tell them a lot of stuff and all that, but like I'm not financially reliant on them, but like I think about their death constantly. I mean, goth albums, but also like I just worry about it all the time. And maybe if I was in a fulfilling relationship, I wouldn't feel that as much, because I wouldn't feel that need to be held by them, because I would feel held by someone else. And it just really sucks that like our society is one in which we feel the need to be held by another person and can't hold ourselves. But like also I was bullied really badly in middle school, and like that really taught me like I just have to be my own champion and be there for myself. And so ever since then, I've just always my own like best friend kind of, and like I really enjoy, I spend so much time on my own and I enjoy it. I don't really get bored of my own company. It would just be, so it's, for me, it's, I'm just naturally extroverted, so I would like to be around another person more often. And I'm like, okay, I already know myself. I've been on my own forever. I'm ready to not be. So it's not that I don't think my own company or I'm enough. It's more just like I'm tired of it. But I think that there are a lot of people in the world where they were trained to think it's not enough. Like, you're not enough. You have to be completed by a separate person. I mean, talk about Wuthering. I mean, speaking of Kate Bush and Wuthering Heights, or, you know, that whole novel is a cautionary tale about people who feel like they need to feel they're not whole without someone else.
Yeah, so Kate has talked quite a bit about the song. This is from Len Brown in the Realm of the Senses, NME.
It's funny you say that, because I was like, she's barely, when I saw your notes, I was like, I was expecting a lot more.
I know, I was too, but it looks like there's this one here, I don't know where I got this one from, it's probably somewhere on Gaffa, I'm sure, but this one is from NME, October 7th, 1989. She says, quote, "It's about trying to grow up. Growing up for most people is just trying to stop escaping, looking at things inside yourself rather than outside. But I'm not sure if people ever grow up properly. It's a continual process, growing in a positive sense." And also, I have to add to that I know plenty of people my age who have like the emotional maturity of a 4-year-old. So growing up is very different for very people, lots of people.
Yeah, and then there are people who are 22 who are like old, you know, like totally.
This one is, I wish I knew which interview this came from. The interviewer says, this song, The Fog, on here, featuring your father as himself. To which she laughs and says, "My first feature film."
Yeah, I was like, when I saw that, I wonder what she means. I mean, we don't have an answer. I wonder what she meant by that. like, because I think this song is very cinematic in terms of what you're talking about with it being atmospheric. But yeah, like, you already directed some of your own music videos at this point. Like, what makes this scene? I wish the interviewer would probe more there.
And then the interviewer said, "A Family Affair, this album. Tell me about that song. I haven't quite got the hang of it. It's something to do with childhood. It's something to do with childhood memories and growing up and having to stand on your own 2 feet. I think so anyway, but can you tell me what you were thinking?" And Kate says, "Yes, well, that's jolly good." The interviewer says, "Totally wrong, but..." And Kate says, "No, it's not. Again, it's quite a complex song where it's very watery. It's meant to be the idea of a big expanse of water and being in a relationship now and flashing back to being a child, being taught how to swim, and using these two situations as the idea of learning to let go. When I was a child, my father used to take me out into the water, and he'd hold me by my hands and then let go and say, 'Okay, now come on, you swim to me.' And he'd say this. He'd be walking backwards, so the gap would be getting bigger and bigger, and then I'd go, 'Bleh, blah, blah, blah.'" It says splutter, so I'm just trying to splutter there. "I thought that was such an interesting situation where you're scared because you think you're going to drown, but you know you won't because your father won't let you drown, and the same for him. He's kind of letting go. He's letting the child be alone in this situation. Everyone's learning and hopefully growing, and the idea that the relationship is to be in this again, back there swimming and being taught to swim, but not by your father, but by your partner. And the idea that it's okay because you're grown up now, so you don't have to be frightened. Because all you have to do is put your feet down and the bottom's there. The water isn't so deep that you'll drown. You put your feet down, you can stand up and it's only waist high. Look, what's the problem? What are you worried about?" And then there's apparently a question missing here. And then she responds to that unsaid question that's lost in the annals of time. "Again, I think it's such a human condition where we actually, a lot of the time, have such fear of things actually, there's no need to be frightened of at all. It's all in our heads, this big kind of trap. You know that actually, it's not always as terrifying as we think. Again, you know, it's meant to be saying, okay, so it can be rough, but there must be a way out. It's all right."
Yeah, no, it's all really important stuff, like what we were talking about before, about facing your fears and running away. I guess what strikes me hearing this again is that, like, she's saying, you think you're going to drown, but you know you won't. The caveat is because you know your father won't let you go, right? So it's like, it's not like, oh, I know I won't because I'm capable. Does that make sense?
Right. It's, yeah, you're still relying on somebody else.
Which is a metaphor for, like, my analysis of the song, being like, you can't just be okay on one can't be okay on one's own.
When I was learning how to swim, for me, at, like, 32, having never really had a formal swim lesson in my life, that I deal with a lot of depression and anxiety. And what I'll do is, like, I'll get worked up about things. I'll go through a million different scenarios. And maybe some of you guys listening, you're probably nodding your heads. You're like, Because let me tell you, like, if I am scared to do something, I will think of a million different things that can happen, a million things that might go wrong that probably wouldn't actually happen, but I'm just thinking about it because it just might. And then also I couple that with the ADD, and so I'm like, oh, yeah, go over here. Oh, squirrel. Okay, over here. Blah, blah. Oh, squirrel again. Blah, you know, it's just, blah. It gets to be a big mess. And that I know sometimes, and I'll if I'm scared about something, like, say, something like between me and my partner, if I go and I talk to her about, and I'll go and talk to her about it, and she has to be the one that says, No, that's just the anxiety talking. It's all in your head, and it calms down. And that part there, you know, it's all in your head, this big kind of trap. That resonates with me because of me dealing with my anxiety. And for me, the fog is like getting lost in your thoughts and like building things up in your head and just and getting it, and especially with the way that it, when the orchestra comes in and it's all dark and ominous, that's how it feels to
beautiful.
Me sometimes.
Totally.
That, like, yeah. When I'm getting lost in my head, and if some of you guys listening to anxiety, you're probably like, oh, she's speaking my language here. That it is, it feels like it just kind of comes, you're just, yay, everything's fine. Oh, shit, everything's gone to shit. Yeah, that's how it feels sometimes. And I get so worked up in my fears and everything, and then I equate that to swimming, and that swimming was one of the things. Thing I was like, oh no. He's like, no. I'm gonna go sit by the pool and maybe I'll go splash around in the kiddie pool or something like that. And I don't see, you know, kid poopy diapers everywhere. But I'm just gonna go over here and just be safe. I'm not gonna go in the water. And then I finally just had to get in there and do it. I'm like, oh, this actually isn't so bad. hey, this is pretty cool. I like it. It was scary, but I'm glad I did it.
No, that does sound really powerful.
The way the strings come in for You Slip Into the Fog, that's one of my favorite Kate Bush moments in a song ever. Because before that, it sounds like kind of this breezy guitar. And then it's suddenly, when you slip into the fog. And the strings come in. And you feel, for me, it's like I feel that fear of not wanting to let go. And in context of my anxiety, like that's how it feels with the fog of your anxiety trying to take over you. And you just kind of get lost in your own head. You're lost in the fog in your head. I can't let you go. She's using her voice, like she's very, especially on this album and just in general, her voice, she's got much more of a vibrato than she ever really did before.
Yeah.
She used to sing very straight tone. So, you know, when your straight tone is like, whereas vibrato, you get that little oscillation of the sound. And in this one, maybe it's just because her voice is mature, because at this point she's 31 years old. And for sopranos, that's kind of like where you start to kind of hit your peak. But there is so much vibrato. There's a lot more vibrato on this album. It's not like wobbly, super like old lady wobble vibrato kind of thing. Liza Minnelli, I'm looking at you. But it's
she's been through her shit.
Yeah, you can tell that she's got the life experience, and especially like when she sings the high part for "Just Put Your Feet Down, Child."
Yeah,
it's also a little bit breathy too. The way we're, but you can hear the, you know, the oscillation of the sound, and then the same thing on "I Let You Go of You Gently," which that F5 on the I, just that sends chills down my spine every time I hear it. This whole song is like, it's kind of like a little bit trembly, especially when it's just her voice and the guitar in the beginning, where you can really hear like a little bit more, there's a little bit more maturity, but also a little bit more vulnerability in there in Kate's voice. I just love the way that she's using her voice to convey the vulnerability in the song, and I love it. Just like a photograph,
yeah, I'm glad you used the word vulnerability, because that's the one I was looking for but couldn't stumble upon it, because I kept on using delicacy. So what I've noticed in this song is there is a vulnerability and delicacy to her voice that alternates and shifts with more of a firmness. And so there's something of the atmosphere of the song, because of the strings, that makes it elegant, that's also unique, because also when one thinks of strings, one who is me, who is also a huge cinephile, thinks of Psycho and Bernard Herrmann's score for it, and Kate Bush is a huge fan of Hitchcock. So it's interesting that the strings be very elegant, or it could be like, it could be very frightening. And this probably this could be the whole thought and the whole thing on, but like, as this, there's nothing else quite like it, and in terms of how it sounds. And the best Kate Bush songs are the ones that I can describe that way, where I can say, there's no other song like this. And so what you're saying, like, with the vibrato, that I Let Go of You Gently with the F5 is definitely one of my favorite vocal moments of balancing that delicacy and firmness in her voice to create the story of the narrator who themselves is switching between feeling independent and feeling like they need to be held and need guidance. And I think the shifting in the vocal style really reflects that and embodies it. Mm-hmm. And this is very much in keeping with what we've discussed in, like, all the episodes. A few, I know it definitely came up in Houdini and a bunch of other ones where I know I've brought up that the way in which her style, her particular style of vocal control seems to me more in keeping with musical theater singers than traditional pop singers.
Yes, definitely.
When she sings just like a photograph, that word, like a photograph, her voice sounds almost fragile. Just like it does on the Just Put Your Feet Down, Child, the water is only waist high, that gets extended out. But then when she sings This Love Is Big Enough, it's much more solid and grounded, her voice. The vacillating between that, I think, is like that vacillating between like, oh no, I'm prepared, I'm going to drown, I'm going to get lost in the fog, versus I feel secure, I feel held. And really embodying that, but it is definitely, and which is in line with musical theater, in which the voice you're telling, even though this is not one of her story songs per se, the voice is telling the story versus like just conveying the words. It's really embodying this sound of all of it. It's really part of this auditory landscape, and this whole, her voice, and especially this actual orchestration. It's so overpowering and envelops you like the water. This is one of those songs where I'm listening to it, I just want to like sit and close my eyes type of thing. It really just kind of overpowers you. And that's what I need from music personally as a listener. Like this album, I've been open about, I like this album. To me, it's nowhere near her first five, especially her first four. And I've also said in other episodes, especially like the Never Forever ones, that for me personally, my Never Forever is her best vocal album. So that's far from this. But I still really like what she's doing here. It seems very deliberate in terms of conveying, just in being this character. And that's why I hesitate to make this analysis of the song too biographical, because she's always embodying a character. And maybe in this case, maybe it is her. Maybe she is going back to that fear, maybe, you know, of that day in the water with her dad, right? But I think it's really this song telling a universal story of emotions everyone has felt at some point. On the one hand, it's easy for anyone to tap into that, and on the other hand, very wonderful how well she did it. What a great job she did of tapping into that universal experience with just her voice. But I mean, as I said earlier, as much as I'm in analyzing the song's message, it's really just the instrumentation and the sound that makes it one of her most underrated songs that people don't talk about enough. It's just really like it sounds like what the message is, and that's why I'm analyzing the message so much, because they go hand in hand. But this song just sounds incredible. You can speak more to it than me. But like, it's just, God, it's just fucking beautiful. It's just beautiful. And I just, as I said, what I want out of her, the best songs, not just from her, but my favorite songs, period, are just ones that to me just don't really sound like anything else. And this song doesn't sound like anything else. And that's why, for me, it's definitely one of her best on this album. This album, to me, is a little too grounded in the real world for me, in terms of, like, just telling kind of, like, as I said, these more kind of pared-down lyrics, songs that you can tell were released in 1989 versus, like, could have been made yesterday. And vocals aren't as interesting to me. But this song, for me, is a huge standout in her discography.
It is. And for me, I agree. For me, The Fog is one of her most underrated songs. It's you get the the atmosphere and the way she's using her voice, and I totally get Kate's vocal approach from the beginning has always been more related to musical theater. I definitely agree, because she's it's because she's always trying to convey a character in a song, and you don't get that in much pop music. Usually whatever Taylor Swift is singing about, it's going to be about her.
Keyword.
And that's the way it is for most pop singers. If Billie Eilish is singing about somebody, it's probably her and what she and her brother are thinking about whatever thing.
Or not. You know, I think my being a Kate fan has really opened my mind to just trying to not presume, period, that people are singing it themselves, not just her. Like, who was talking about this? It'll come to me in, like, in an hour. But there was someone who was... Oh, it was Mitski. Okay, so Mitski, she was... I was reading an interview with her, so I'm, as I said, a huge film buff cinephile. One of my top 10 favorite movies is the 2001 French movie called The Piano Teacher, and I was pretty shook, as I could say, to learn that Mitski actually was inspired by that movie in her most recent album, Be the Cowboy, and that she was... I was reading this interview with her where she's talking about how there's like a specific narrator to this album, and it's not her. And if you just listen to it, you would just kind of assume that it's her. So it really doubled. It made me check that impulse to just assume that the person singing is the musician, which I think is something that Kate has really opened the doors to.
So you had some thoughts on the intro. I'm seeing, looking at the notes.
Oh, yeah, I'm gonna. I mean, as I said, the first time I heard the song, I was like, "This is Britney Spears." This is Britney Spears. I would say what you can do is literally play the opening of each song next to each other. So like, look, that's just like the first time I ever heard it. I don't know. So this song, I didn't automatically love it. It took a while, but automatically I was like, oh, this is the Britney Spears one. Because it's just, that's what the whole UCM album growing up now. I mean, like her, in pop music history, her Britney's third self-titled album is like, that's when she has On Slavery video. That's when she was the whole like, I'm sexy now, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting that her declaration of I'm an adult is like, I'm sexualized now. And Kate's is like, I don't know, different. But it's interesting because, yeah, like in the intro for I'm a Slave for You, says, I know it would be young, but I've got feelings too. So I need to do what I feel like doing. So let me go. I know I may be young, but I've got feelings too. And I need to do what I feel like doing. So let me go. And just listen. Let me go. Just like the fog, just saying. But Britney is launching Let Go, period. Mm-hmm. Like, she doesn't want to be held again. But she does, because in the song I'm a Slave for You, I mean, the whole point is that she's in love with this person, because to the extent that she feels enslaved to them. And then also the intro for Overprotected, the whole, like, I need time, love, joy, I need me. I need time, love, joy, I need space, love, I need me. Action! I just, but this whole like spoken word intro of the fog, I was just like, this is her Britney song. I just love that. I mean, that was when I was growing up. But yeah, so they're kindred spirits.
And on that note, let's see. What else do we have to say about the song?
I'm a slave for it. I don't know. It's my thought. I love this song.
I do too. Like this really had to. It grew on me, and I'm glad that it did. Whole album had to grow on me a little bit, because I wasn't quite at the place in my life where I could understand a lot of what the songs were talking about. I haven't had enough life experience, but now that I'm 35 and been through some crap in the last year, then it hits home for me more than it used to.
That's the power of art. That's what I love about the arts, is that you revisit. Like, I like to rewatch certain movies every few years, and having gone through things in my life, it hits so differently. It's really beautiful how the arts do that for us. You know, like, we, because it's about perception, like any type of media that we take in isn't just about the media that's there. It's also about the way that we're seeing it and how we're framing it through our own eyes and our own experience, and that changes. And to be able to revisit something over time and have that change is really beautiful. I think for me personally, I do like the album. I'm never going to like love the album, no matter how even if I hit the most mature peak of my whole life, will still think that it's not as good as your first dive. Because I just, and that's where there is the piece where it's like, there's objectivity, there's like, we all bring our own subjectivity, so our relationship things change over time. I do think from an objective musical standpoint, this album isn't as strong as the first dive. I just think that's pretty objective, and I'm always right. But I still, yeah, I think it's this song needs to get more love. It's still Kate Bush, you know, it's still good. Like, even her, like, middling material is, like, decent. You know, it's, I mean, she has a few bad songs in her catalog, but even those, like, they're not 100% bad. They're bad because of, like, a specific thing, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Or, like, it'll be catchy but cringy, copy the music. Here's, yet again, I think I'm, like, there's a drinking contest someone probably has out there somewhere for me to say, release the DVDs. Release the DVD, Kate. Bye.
If there isn't, then there should be.
Yeah. Voice as an instrument, check. I used to say, I specifically avoided using those words right now, but
I'm trying not to say those either, but even though that's like, if I have to describe her music.
Because that's what it is.
I know, if I'm describing, like, other people who don't really know about her, except now they know it for me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's the thing. It's like, if you don't know about her yet, don't worry, you will.
Mm-hmm.
If you get to know me. Talk me once, effort next day.
No, I love this song as well. I love the atmosphere of the fog. I love that it just takes me into another world. I think that some of Kate Bush's best songs do that for me. They have their mm-hmm. own self-contained universe that you just
exactly
come back to time and time again. There's so much thought. There's so much love put into her songs, especially on this one, and the personal connections that I have with this song and my own growing up, and, you know, learning to put my feet down and realizing the water is only waist high, and realizing that things aren't so bad, and growing up, and I've done a lot of growing up in the last year, and I would even say a year and a half to 2 years, and that's when the song and the rest of the sensual world started to become a little bit more important for me, because I started realizing, wait, I can kind of relate to this, or just I was at the right time in my life for me to understand it more. And I think that The Fog is with you. I think that this is one of her most underrated songs. It's absolutely beautiful. And hopefully you guys listening out there, maybe go back and listen to The Fog and, like, oh, hey, wait. I love how Cecily and Zoe talked about the song. And now I love it, too. I'm a fan forever. The hashtag Fog Forever, yeah. Or something like that.
Yeah. But what's interesting for me is when I think of this song, I actually have, like, a visual image come to mind because of the atmosphere. I have come up to mind. It's, like, a totally black background, which is, like, this mist rising above it. And, like, yeah, that doesn't really happen for me with many songs. I think the atmosphere of the song is so strong that it literally conjures an image.
Mm-hmm. For me, it's thinking of, because where I live now, it's very rural, but there are a lot of rivers around here. And so I picture, like, one of these rivers that I'm happen to be driving past, and maybe it's early in the morning or something, and I see just the thick fog coming in from the Atlantic, just kind of coming in, and it's coming up over a little bit over the Outer Banks and coming out my way, and I'm looking out, and it's so beautiful that I have to stop the car wherever I'm going, and, you know, I get out of my car.
Yeah, this is one of those songs for sure where you just have to, like, let it take you over.
Yeah. Like, I'm just like, no, this is so beautiful, I have to stop. And so I get off the side of the road, get off the side of a country road, and I'm just standing just in awe of this fog rolling in over the river, and it's so mysterious. I mean, this whole area where I live now, it's so mysterious. Anyway, I live close to the Outer Banks in North Carolina, and there's, I think, just because of the history here with the Carolina Algonquians who were here first, and then the English, and then just everybody else, all this, these things just coming together, so much we don't even know that's been lost to history, and all lost in the fog, and just mm-hmm. I'm rambling at this point, but that's what this song does to me. I just have to talk about it.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show, as always. Oh my god,
that's always a pleasure. This is so good to do after, like, I after a year. Like, there's no, because I've been on other podcasts, that other interests of mine, too. And, like, there's just, although this is my favorite to A, podcast, and B, to be on. And it's just, there's nothing like the feeling of, like, just immersing myself in, like, writing down my analysis and researching. It's the best thing in the world. I'd love to do it for a living. So thank you, as always, for having me. I'm down to it. I'll just talk about whatever.
Well, that's it for this week's episode of Strange Phenomena, the music of Kate Bush. Thank you all so much for listening to this week's episode, and I'm excited to be reaching out to you again next week for an episode about track 4 from The Sensual World, Reaching Out. But first things first, if you enjoy this show, feel free to leave a review on iTunes. It helps people better find the show. Hopefully a 5-star review, though. Frankly, if you've made it this far, this must mean you love me. You really love me and my show. Yay. I hope so. Also, you can find me on Facebook, facebook.com/KateBushPodcast, on the web at StrangeKateCast on Twitter. And there's also a hotline. So if you want to leave a couple of quick thoughts about a song, you can call 1-757-349-6369. And your message might be played on a future episode. Also, I'm on the web at kbcast.linkmedia.com, and you can email me kbcast@linkmedia.com. That's, of course, link with an E. Also, I have a Patreon, so you can go to patreon.com/katebushpodcast, and I'm going to be putting out some extra goodies for folks who want to help support the show. So, yes, lots of different ways that you can find me and my show. I'm so happy that you guys have made it this far, and I'm happy to continue on through the sensual world, which is just a wonderful place to be. And I hope you agree. So join us next time. I'm going to be reaching out to you for the song Reaching Out. See everybody next time.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Frunino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.